Yatpada Padmam. The lotus feet of whom? Mahatam. Of the higher personalities. Mana Ali Bihi. By the bees of the mind. Shevatam. Being engaged at. Brahma Rasa. Of transcendental bliss. Brahmananda. Asava Artabihi. Seeking the nectar. Lokasha. Of the common man. Yat. Which. Varshati. He fulfills. Cha. And. Ashishaha. Desires. Artinaha. Seeking. Tasmai. Towards him, Lord Shiva. Bhavan. You. Dhruyati. Are envious. Vishwabandhave. Unto the friend of all living entities. Within the three worlds. Translation. You are envious of Lord Shiva, who is the friend of all living entities within the three worlds. For the common man, he fulfills all desires. And because of their engagement and thinking of his lotus feet, he also blesses higher personalities who are seeking after Brahmananda, transcendental bliss. You repeat. You are envious of Lord Shiva, who is the friend of all living entities. Within the three worlds. For the common man. He fulfills all desires. And because of their engagement. In thinking of his lotus feet. He also blesses higher personalities. For seeking after Brahmananda. Transcendental bliss. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ordinarily, there are two classes of men. One class who are grossly materialistic, want material prosperity, and their desires are fulfilled if they worship Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, being very quickly satisfied, satisfies the material desires of the common man very quickly. Therefore, it is seen that ordinary men are very much apt to worship him. Next, those who are disgusted or frustrated with a materialistic way of life worship Lord Shiva to attain salvation, which entails freedom from material identification. One who understands that he is not the material body, but his spirit soul is liberated from ignorance. Lord Shiva also offers that facility. People generally practice religion for economic development, to get some money, for by getting money they can satisfy their senses. But when they are frustrated, they want spiritual Brahmananda, or merging into the Supreme. These four principles of material life, religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation exist, and Lord Shiva is the friend of both the ordinary man and the man who is elevated in spiritual knowledge. Thus, it was not good for Daksha to create enmity toward him. Even Vaishnavas, who are above both the ordinary and the elevated men in this world, also worship Lord Shiva as the greatest Vaishnava. Thus, he is the friend of everyone, the common man, men, the elevated men, and the devotees of the Lord, so no one should disrespect or create enmity towards Lord Shiva. Okay. Yat pada padman mahatam manulibir nishevatam brahma rasasa vartibihi lokosya yad varshati chashishortinas tasmai bhavan truyati vishva Bandhave. So Om Ganat Timananda Shah Garanjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yenatas Mai Shigurave Namaha. So Prabhupada in this purport presents three aspects of worship of Lord Shiva. The verse specifically refers to two aspects of worship of Lord Shiva. Yeah, the two aspects that the verse refers to are the aspects of material sense gratification and liberation from material sense gratification. And the aspect that Srila Prabhupada adds at the end of the purport is devotional service. So actually, it depends on how you worship Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is a Vaishnava. So it also depends on how you worship or approach any Vaishnava. Just like we're chanting every morning, isn't it? Vancha kalpa turubhyascha kripa sindubhyavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namaha, an ocean of mercy, etc. So a Vaishnava is like a kalpa vriksha tree. Like a kalpa vriksha tree means a tree you can get anything you want from. That would be cool to have that. Next tree we bring back from Vrindavan to plant will be a kalpa vriksha tree. Actually, I have one in my house. It's a branch of it, and I touch it whenever I want something, you know, like Aladdin's lamp. So it's interesting. Let's tell the story of Sanatana Goswami and the touchstone, because this is very much applicable in this regard. Like, there was this personality. He was actually worshiping Lord Shiva, because of the Lord Shiva story. And his personality, he wanted wealth. And Lord Shiva advised him that you go to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, there's this great personality, Sanatana Goswami, who has a touchstone. Now, a touchstone is like what, the Midas touch? Anyone's heard of the Midas touch before? That's a poor guy, Midas, who turned his whole family to gold. And he couldn't enjoy with them anymore because they were all gold. The original gold finger. Anyway, it's a James Bond movie. Anyway, so those of you who don't know. So this person, following the order of Lord Shiva, you know, worship Lord Shiva, he went to Vrindavan and met Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami was asked, you know, where is the touchstone? Sanatana Goswami said, it's in my garbage. You just have to rummage through this pile here, garbage. You know, anyway, you know what garbage is. So this person was rummaging through the garbage and he found the touchstone and he became completely enamored with it. Wow, I've got it. This is better than investing in Wall Street or doing the Forex or, you know, working as a psychiatrist or anything like that. You know, and I don't have to work anymore. Huddy bull. He didn't say huddy bull. And so he's taking the touchstone, touching it, turning everything and go, wow. This is great, you know. After a while, he just thought, I'm still not happy. Huh? All this stuff. Just like you see sometimes, you know, when someone's very rich, they put jewelry, a lot of rings on their fingers. And, you know, or young people, they're thinking putting rings on different parts of the body are going to make them happy. Like I told this story the other day. Or people think by coloring, you know, people do all sorts of crazy things to try to make themselves happy nowadays. And by coloring their hair, by spiking their hair, right? Purple hair, you know, like if you go in an airplane, there's a bunch of Japanese people there, you know, half of them have red hair. And it's not because they have naturally red hair, it's because, you know, they're dyeing it like that. And even our old all the old families, the old men, and not the women so much, in India, they put this reddish stuff. What's the reddish stuff they put in there? Henna. They put the, you know, I know when someone's getting old because then they start to have red hair. In Fiji, no longer gray hair. In Fiji, it's like that. I got some of my disciples who were like in their 30s, you know, high 30s, and then all of a sudden one day they come with red hair. A man, you know, not women. Women are just much more like subdued when they're doing these things, but men, when they color their hair, it's weird. So they color their hair, and I said, huh, we'll just leave it the natural color. Who cares? So people are doing all these different things, and ultimately, they keep trying and keep trying, and it doesn't can't get no satisfaction. So this guy with a gold finger, or Goldstone, that must be a Jewish name, Goldstone, Goldstein. Goldstein means gold merchant, actually, not stone. But anyway, so they're... Yeah, Berg is a mountain. Gold mountain. Gold mountain, yeah. That's right. Berg means mountain. Like iceberg or something like that. So Goldberg. So anyway, so so he was just turning everything to gold. He got frustrated. You know, I'm still not happy. So he thought, well, actually, he began to reflect. You know, when someone gets frustrated, they reflect a little bit. And he thinks, well, maybe there's something else in life, because Sanatana Goswami was keeping this thing in the garbage. I had to rummage through the garbage. So he went back to Sanatana Goswami. He said to Sanatana Goswami, there must be something more valuable than this because you keep it in your garbage. And Sanatana Goswami said, yes. And the man said, yes, teach me what's more valuable. And Sanatana Goswami said, first thing you got to do is what? Throw it in the river. In the Jamuna River. Because you're not going to find a stone in the Jamuna River. I mean, that time the Jamuna was much more full than it is now. It's just like they had this airplane accident and they're looking for the black box and everything like that. So they can't find it. So the guy was thinking, throw it in the Jamuna River, huh? Maybe I put a little, radio device on it, I can find it later. He wasn't thinking like that. But he was, so finally he's just like, back and forth. You know how someone, like, when they're trying to make a decision, they go back and forth. He walked up to the Jamuna and went, I can't do it. And then he walked back and said, but I'm still not happy. And then he walked back. I can't do it. This is what I've been waiting for my whole life. And then finally he just closes his eyes. You know how you're doing something you don't really want to do? And it's just like, oh, you have to do it, and you just close it up. And he throws it in, and says, I did it. And it's a big relief once you do something like that, you get it out of the way. So then he goes back to Sanatana Goswami, he said, all right. And then Sanatana Goswami teaches him to chant Hare Krishna. So you see, actually, interesting, in that story, we find someone not only approaching Lord Shiva, but also approaching Sanatana Goswami for something material. So Lord Shiva, generally he's approached to for those particular purposes, especially when people think that he's God. Let me just explain a little psychology. There's Shaivites in India. Some Shaivites are just like plain old weird. Like Naga Babas or something like that. The Shaivites who cover themselves with ashes. Some are just weird. But other ones worship Lord Shiva as God. But the interesting thing is, when you worship someone as God who's not God, even if he happens to be a devotee, it doesn't attract the mind the way Krishna's pastimes attract the mind. Just like, we understand Krishna's God, and you hear about Krishna, what did he do, stealing butter from his the gopis and feeding it to the monkeys, and Krishna's doing so many, interesting things, running out in the middle of the night, having affairs with so many gopis. And the point is that Lord Shiva doesn't do any of those things. He just stays with Sati. There's not really an interesting romantic thing going on there. Isn't it? I mean, it's nice. We're not criticizing. I mean, people should stay with their wives. We don't want people running away. And, he does some interesting things, but like drinking the ocean of poison when it's the halad jar or something like that, when it was produced from the churning of the milk ocean. But it's not, it doesn't really have the same effect of just like attracting, because the word Krishna means what that which attracts. It's like an iron rod attracts, a magnetic rod attracts iron filings, You ever seen that? Like an iron rod attracts iron filings, or like a black hole in space attracts everything. Everything goes into a black hole in space. So you think about that, like Krishna, you just think about Krishna, and then the mind becomes naturally attracted to bhakti. But if you think about Lord Shiva, apart from being a devotee of Krishna, then the mind doesn't become attracted to bhakti. It becomes attracted to, what can I get? Think about it. If you worship Lord Shiva like that, the mind is like, what can I get? Or at the most, liberation, But it's all me, what he can do for me. Just psychologically, if you think about the effect of worshiping Lord Shiva, not considering he's a Vaishnava. Therefore, when Narada Muni was praising, this is from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita story, when Narada Muni was praising various Vaishnavas, he went to Lord Shiva at one point, and he was praising Lord Shiva as being the greatest Vaishnava, then Lord Shiva, in his great humility, because that's a characteristic of a Vaishnava, humility. Lord Shiva actually said, "How can I become a great? How can I be considered a great Vaishnava? Because I'm giving these benedictions to materialistic people." And then he said, "I'm giving this liberation," because that's a little controversial point. Liberation. Don't we all want liberation from this material world? Don't we all want to get the hell out of here? You know, you hear about this, all the devotees say, you know, "I hope this is my last birth in the material world." That's also a desire for liberation, isn't it? It's actually explained as a negative. I want to get out. Just think about it. It's not really a positive thing. Liberation is not a positive thing. In fact, Lord Shiva, when he was praised by Narada Muni, said, "The Vaishnavas decry this liberation." In other words, they criticize it. There's that famous quote by Prabhupada Saraswati where he says, "Kaivalya Nadakayate," that this liberation, Brahmananda, which is described there, is like hell. It's like hell. It's sort of like hell for a Vaishnava because there's no activity, there's no personal relationships. You know, we have a need for personal relationships, for love. It's actually not even considering any of your needs. You know, if you look at it from a need-based standpoint, liberation does not actually take into consideration any need. Zero. Huh? Think about it. There's nothing. Not physical needs. Not mental needs, not spiritual needs, nothing need. At least, you know, material life takes into consideration some of your needs, like breathing, relationships, temporary relationships until someone croaks. That's a problem. I mean, even a material relationship happens to work nicely, someone's going to croak sooner or later. I'm not talking about the frogs. Croaking is a euphemism for dying. So, you know, we're just looking for that perfect partner in this material world, our soulmate, who we are not complete without. That, you know, pseudo-spiritualists, they talk about that, doesn't it? I'm not complete, I'm only half. But then, anyway, the soulmate doesn't have so much soul. Anyway, So this liberation, Lord Shiva describes, "I give liberation, but the Vaishnavas hate this stuff." You know, and it's just misery. And of course, in the Bhagavatam, it says, "Aruya kachena parampatam," that one goes up to that liberation, and then ultimately, when they get frustrated, they come down again to this material world. So it's not even a satisfying in any by any stretch of the imagination, this liberation. So that's what happens when one worships Lord Shiva without considering his position as a Vishnu Bhakta. You know, one gets bhukti, that's Prabhupada talks about here, a dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Okay. Or, as described by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, bhukti, mukti, or siddhi. So two different ways of explaining it. Of course, dharma means one gets to feel that one's religious, performing some rituals. You know, people like rituals. It's interesting. I was just listening to a class of Rina Nandamar talking about the Karma Mimamsa people in India, how they became very proficient at rituals. I mean, they actually got all these Vedic rituals down, you know, exactly to the second when you're supposed to throw the ghee into the fire, what sort of spoon you're going to use. And even the other darshans, the people, you know, like the devotees and everything like that, when they want to learn about rituals, they go to the Karma Mimamsa people. They say, you know, "Hey, when are we supposed to do this? You know, we want to look good, you know. Chanting Hare Krishna is the main thing, but, you know, we got to impress people and make friends, so." Isn't it? So, tell us about the rituals. Like Prabhupada said about his god brothers, he said, I don't know anything about these rituals, just go to my god brothers for them. I'm not saying they were karmic moms of people, but they're really not important. But the karmic moms of people behavior. So that's dharma. Just like, you really feel good about yourself when you're doing rituals, even if you don't even know what the rituals mean. Just like the devotees in Mayapur start, when they do these farzakas, they put on these funny rabbit hats, which are not even part of our sampradaya or any, probably I think they're part of the Madhva sampradaya or something like that or some other. But it's just like, people feel good about it. It just impresses people. That just like when devotees do home fire sacrifice people, they have to get a certain amount of rituals so they impress people. The people don't know what's going on, but you just got to impress people with some show. It's like Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus. Something has to be going on. If you just go on and say, Hare Krishna, people say, hey, where's my ritual? Right? So they need all these things. The main thing is chanting Hare Krishna, but we add all these rituals like window dressing. So that people will be impressed or take it seriously. Because if you have a religion without rituals, nobody's going to take it seriously. You just come in and everyone just goes, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare, all day long, huh? Tell us about your rituals. At least from a sociological standpoint, we wouldn't give anybody anything to study. It's like when you go into the university, I used to give lectures in the university and people ask about the rituals. Hey, what's that on your forehead? Huh? Tilak, why do you dress like that? Well, it's a uniform. So all these things, that's dharma. Because, it just gives people stability in life. The thing, dharma, we have our rituals. When there's a disappearance, what do they do in the Jewish religion? They have Kaddish Morris, Kaddish, like that. Yiskadal, Yiskadash, Kamehrabal. It makes you feel good about it. Or you go to the funeral home, you have your rituals, so they wheel the casket into the room and everybody offers a flower, But then, anyway, it's all Krishna. Hare Krishna, chant Hare Krishna takes care of everything. I'm not saying we should do away with the rituals. So there's Dharma and then Artha. That's what we're all interested in. We don't have time for the rituals when we do artha. It's like we see, when people, artha means economic development, when people have to make money, don't have time for sadhana, don't have time for rituals anymore. Just that. So dharma, artha. And then when you made enough money, then it's time for kama. One day we should give a class on the Kama Sutra. Anyway, so that is kama. Die, kama. And then when one is frustrated, moksha. So that's one way of explaining what Lord Shiva gives if he's not approached as a devotee. Another way of explaining is according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which I quoted from before, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi. Basically, this is what Lord Shiva gives. He gives bhukti. Bhukti means like bhoga, enjoyment, material enjoyment. Mukti is the liberation we just spoke about. And siddhi means powers. Wouldn't that be cool if you had all these powers? You could, just like make people hypnotized and serve you. Sometimes people have some of these powers. It's called charisma, actually. Hitler was able to hypnotize a whole country, Must have been from some past something he did, past demoniac activities or what? Yeah, he was hypnotized too. But sometimes you watch like ministers, they actually like hypnotize too. So, or they have some charisma like that, and people just go, ooh. And then you ask them later, what did they say? I don't remember. Someone's giving Bhagavatam class. What did he say in class? Huh? It was nice. What did he say? I don't remember. This is city, powers. Or people even have like physical powers. It's like, I have a friend who's a ninja. He can jump out of tall buildings. The three-story building, like it was in Serbia, he jumped out of a three-story building when thieves were coming to steal some cars. Whoop, boom. And that's like a power. Prabhupada said also that we have mystic powers too. Do you remember, anyone remember how Prabhupada talked about what mystic powers we have? The hair and fingernails. They're growing. And fingernails are growing. So that's like mystic powers. So anyway. So what we want powers in this world. You know, just like when we hear about, I mean, just like I have one disciple who's very much attracted to people with different, like, superpowers. I know he's not watching now, because he's in New York. What? Might be. I hope not. So there's this very attractive, like, you know, powers, like, you know, the way you can make spider webs come out of your fingers. That would be horrible. Ugh. I mean, just like this morning, after rain, there's spider webs all over the place. I ran into one. He goes, yuck! Or someone can make himself go very fat. You know, it's like what that is a perverted reflection of the Vedic mystic powers, you know, that people get. Because we hear about the sages, they can do things like that. Actually, more wonderful things. Like Hanuman, he can make himself, of course, he wasn't just a mystic yogi, he's a devotee, but devotees naturally have all mystic powers. He can make himself very, very small, like a little ant, or he can make himself gigantic, Mahima, or Lagima, he can float in the air, you know, he can jump to Lanka. Yeah, so there's the original Superman. Isn't it? Or Krishna, what does he go? Krishna with all these powers, you know, Krishna. He marches into the mouth of the Yagasura, expands himself, kills the Yagasura demon. Krishna divides himself up and dances with each and every gopi. I mean, wouldn't some man like that? If he went to a disco, he could dance with every girl in the disco. So we're very attracted by these things. You know, I said, power. I can give you powers. And even people have, like, black magic. Someone came to me the other day and said that her family was trying to kill her through black magic. Ooh. In Fiji, it's especially prominent. You know, you have all these people doing black magic. I've been cursed, Maharaj. What should I do? Anyway, so, let's get down to the point because I only have a few more minutes. But Lord Shiva, we should worship him as a devotee, not as the giver of all these material benedictions or as God, because, you know, then our mind simply stays on ourselves rather than on bhakti. And we worship him as a devotee, we get bhakti. And Lord Shiva does so many amazing things that encourage us with bhakti. If we think of him as a devotee, I mean, just like some past lives I was thinking of, was that in Vrindavan, once upon a time, Lord Shiva, he was meditating on Krishna. And what happened is that he wanted to see Krishna. But because Lord Shiva doesn't really, you know, dress so nicely. You know, like the residents of Vrindavan, they're all dressed nicely. They have earrings and all sorts of beautiful accoutrements. You know, nice saris. No white saris in Vrindavan. They're all wearing multicolored saris. And you know, earrings and, you know, jewelry in the forehead. So when Lord Shiva, he wanted to see Krishna. So what happened is, this is the story we told the story before, he went to little baby Krishna, this is in Gokul. He went to see Krishna and he knocked on, of course, he had to knock on the door. This is different than the Putana story where she made herself beautiful and she got admittance immediately. Isn't it? Putana was ugly as hell. But she made herself, she put on a facade of beauty through her. She had this power. Demons generally have the power where they can make themselves look like anything they want, even if they're ugly as sin. So Lord Shiva didn't do that. He has so many powers. But so he looked like his natural thing, you know, meditation, matted hair, you know, basically, you know, almost naked. And he comes to Mother Yashoda's door and knocks on the door, and she answers the door, and she goes, yuck! And she slams it. He wants to see Krishna, you know, poor Lord Shiva, he wants to see Krishna. And Yashoda's just like seeing this, you know, what she considers to be this wretched sage, you know, coming to her door. He has skulls on his neck and everything like that. That really detaches you when you have skulls around. Don't do that. Anyway, doctors do that. They have skulls in their office. So she just said, you know, my dear sage, you know, here's some prasadam, you know, take it, go away. And he said, I want to see your son. Nandalo. And then she said, no, just go back to worry. And then so Lord Shiva he felt all depressed at that point. So he was meditating. But then Krishna, he wanted to see Lord Shiva, and Yashoda wasn't letting Lord Shiva see him. So Krishna just started crying uncontrollably. Do you ever have a child that cries uncontrollably? Of course, I can't imitate Krishna's crying. But it was... You know, for the mother, that's great. And if Krishna's crying, is probably very beautiful. But I'm sure it's beautiful. But it just makes the mother extremely nervous. It's like I've been in the plane when children cry. It doesn't make me nervous. It just makes... I don't want to say it makes me angry because I'd be blaming the child. I have a need for quiet and peace. And it's, you know, it's just like a 10,000 decibel sound coming out. It's like a siren, you know, in the middle of the plane. So... Anyway, so Krishna kept crying, and Yashoda, the mother is actually naturally just like, oh my God, my child, you know, what's happening? Something must have happened auspicious, and then she reflected upon what just happened. You know, what have I done? What's happened during the last day? Did I offend someone? Because this is generally, you know, they, even in Vrindavan, they have like superstition like that. It's not like, you know, the child needs a bottle, so let me give it a bottle. So that she's thinking, you know, it must have been something. Just like when Krishna defeated the demons, Yashoda Maya used to do all sorts of, like, superstitious things, like, you know, dust them off with a tail of a cat, a cow, like that, you know, just, like, pray to the demigods or something like that. And then, so she was just thinking, you know, what have I done wrong? I must, because the Vedic culture, you think I must have offended someone. So anyway, so she understood she offended Lord Shiva. She called for Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva came, and Krishna was quiet. He stopped crying, and she said to Lord Shiva, you should come every day and see my child. And Lord Shiva was very happy. So if we understand Lord Shiva like that, then we get pure devotional service. As a Vaishnava, especially as a Vaishnava in Vrindavan, he also guards the four directions. And you find so many Lord Shiva Murtis or Lingas in Vrindavan. Okay, all glories to Shiva.